Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle ready-to-drink coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
The lengths to which the Biden legal team has gone to try to intimidate our witnesses, to coordinate with the Department of Justice, and to certainly coordinate with the Democrats on the House Oversight Committee to encourage people not to cooperate with our investigation, to encourage banks not to turn over bank records, to encourage Treasury not to let us have access to those suspicious activity reports. It's very troubling, and I believe that this is another violation of the law. This is obstruction of justice.
Well, it is obstruction of justice. We'll see how it goes because the hearing is today. It's like hearing palooza, isn't it? I mean, it's just like nonstop hearings. And that's, I mean, all we're seeing, which is good because it means that they're paying attention. They're kind of doing their jobs, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Welcome to the show. It's Monday. Dana Lash here with you to get your week started off correctly. And we got a lot of stuff to get into, and we're going to get into all of that. Like I said, the hearing, the Devin Archer hearing, he's supposed to be Joe Biden's like BFF, Hunter Biden's BFF, whatever. And this, we'll kind of see how this goes because they were wanting Devin Archer to flip on him. And I don't know if that's actually going to happen or not. So, you know, we'll kind of. Do you think he's going to flip, Kane? I don't think he's going to. I don't know if he's going to flip. They got something on these people.
Yeah,
I saw
a text exchange that, you know, may or may not be true. But apparently he was upset at the fact that he was being targeted, family being targeted and the whole nine. And he was asking Hunter why. So I don't know.
Basically the answer was because you're not me.
Your last name's not Biden.
I read that whole email exchange. I'd read it for you guys now. But, you know, it's Monday and you're at work and I don't want you to feel like you're drunk. Because it's kind of ridiculous the way that he was like explaining this. I mean, ultimately, he was like, well, you're not me. And then he acted, what I love most about it is he was acting like it was this, you know, they're being persecuted because they were acting like they were the damn Borgias or something. It was so insane. So that's kicking off today. There's a couple of other things because, you know, House is out of session for the next 6 weeks. There's not going to be any legislative push, but. There's going to be a lot of, gamesmanship because they're going to try to sell. They got to go back to their districts and sell people on everything. They got to sell their voters on what they're trying to, what they're going to be pushing. And the other thing, too, that I wanted to bring up, because this all goes into it. So you have the hearing. You have some of this, like this green, because Biden's still pushing the green stuff. By the way, he's on vacation, for 10 days? On the beach in Delaware for 10 days. So that's, I mean, when is he not on vacation? When is he not on vacation? He's going to be, did you see some of the pictures too? I mean, he's an old dude. So I'm not going to pass judgment, but he's on vacation for 10 days. No idea what the hell he's doing, but that's what he's, you know, that's where he's at. And he's, while this is all going on, he's gotten out of Dodge because now you have the hearing for this Devin Archer guy. So we'll see how it all goes out, but everybody's got to go back to their districts in the House. They got to sell people on stuff. And, in the meantime, they got to push on with, Green. And as that's happening, then you have the 2024 Republican stupid slap fight. I really feel like Republicans want to lose the election. I do. I feel like they want to lose it. I got some really harsh words coming up because I hate almost everyone. Just so you know, like there's people that I like in the primary and there's people that I like second. And apparently, if you don't like literally bend over and kiss someone's butt, then you're apparently a never, you hate someone. And I hate that partisan progressive line of thinking. I want to just, I wish it was a person so I could assault it. I hate it so bad. But we're going to talk about how Republicans are being morons with all this stuff. I don't have any nice words to say today. It's Monday. All right. So, like, right out of the gate here, you, all of, because I saw this piece, there's so much that's still coming out of the whole laptop. Laptops. Who leaves? I know I've said this before. I just don't understand why somebody leaves a whole laptop somewhere as opposed to a part of it. I don't know. Like, who leaves a laptop? Because they're expensive. And the kind of laptops that he has, those are not cheap. They're expensive. How much are, he's got like a $2,000 laptop that he's just like leaving everywhere. Kane left his iPad somewhere and I thought he was going to have therapy for life. He's like, oh my gosh! Oh! He was freaking out.
True.
It sounded just like that too. I just played that. There's a recording of him doing it. It was crazy. Hunter Biden leaves it, and Kane just like on your stuff. You, I mean, not that you didn't have anything important, but I mean, he just had like some stuff on there. He had to work stuff. He had like actual legit videos of him. You know, pretty compromising things, and didn't care apparently. Just doesn't even care. I'm just I love that's that private citizen privilege coming up again. So. The Republicans are saying that the Department of Justice is trying to intimidate Devin Archer because, see, at first there was this story that was going out over the weekend where they were saying, well, the story was that the DOJ will have Devin Archer jailed before he could testify. And then the way that Republicans are characterizing this is that the DOJ walked it back. You know, I don't know. I really feel like the Republicans are actually correct on this because the DOJ, this is one of the most, I think, anticipated hearings that we're having. Not like not that the UFO stuff wasn't or any of this other stuff, but Devin, this was the guy who was literally not only was he Hunter's best friend, but he was also his business partner. So he was there through the whole bit of it and getting into the influence peddling, all of it. And so the DOJ over the weekend, the story came out, and this is the New York Post. The story came out that they were trying to jail him the night before the plan was to try to jail him the night before he testified. And it was apparently Manhattan federal prosecutors filed a letter requesting that a judge set a date for Archer to start his 1 year sentence. It was a fraud case that was unrelated to the Hunter Biden fiasco. But the request, because it came through Manhattan. The request came after the Second Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed his conviction. The conviction was in 2018. Confirmed his conviction because he had two felony charges for his role in a conspiracy to defraud a Native American tribe. And so this conviction, they were trying to actually enforce and jail him before. So to me, it really sounds like, you know, they were trying to intimidate him. That sounds like witness intimidation. I mean, on the eve of testimony, on the eve. Juan's showing you Devin Archer right there. He's got his hair real coiffed back. I mean, he's one of those dudes. He looks like a DC Comics bad guy. But they said that they were going to jail him the night. But that sounds like witness intimidation. I mean, think of the timing of this, because this has been planned. They knew that because at first Devin Archer, they knew it was supposed to be last week. Remember, and I was telling you it could get kicked to Thursday. Then last week we found out it was like Thursday. I think we found out that it was going to be Monday. And so now all of a sudden the DOJ is like, oh, well, I guess we're going to go ahead and enforce this. We're going to go ahead and jail him. So he's not going to be able to testify. So the Republicans called it out. And it looks as though the Department of Justice walked back. So the problem is that and this is what the Republicans have on their hands. So he was the business partner in Rosemont Seneca. That was the company that Hunter Biden, I know there was a lot to keep track of, but this is Rosemont Seneca. Rosemont Seneca was the company that was used to funnel all of this foreign cash into the family accounts. So they sort of, you know, facilitated that, and they used that to bring it all through. And so he was the guy who was on all of these different conference calls with Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. Let's not forget that, because when it came out that Joe Biden was on these calls, well, that came out because of Devin Archer. Devin Archer was the one who told everyone this. And so, and he was also the one where Hunter had said he was going to, quote unquote, close the deal. Remember, they had dinners. He said on the call that they had had some dinners at which his dad, Joe, was present, and they were going to close these deals, and that he had been talking to the, quote unquote, clients. And the stuff I'm putting in quotes is the stuff that literally came from their discussions, their texts and their emails. And so what you're going to see the media and Democrats play up is what I was just telling you about. The reason why, and I think this is also kind of why the DOJ was pushing the idea, or was filing this request, filing the paperwork to arrest him the night before. Even if they weren't going to follow through, what does that do? Now think about it. You have this major, I mean, he's the firsthand witness, the business partner of Hunter Biden. He's going to sit and testify. And his testimony, I mean, he's, to take him seriously, you're looking at his credibility, you're looking at everything that he's seen. Well, that's just the thing. The DOJ wants to bring it front and center. They want to question his credibility by reminding everyone of these 2018 convictions, which is one of the reasons why I think they were pushing this. I think I go back and forth. I'm half in that I think they were trying to intimidate him, but I also half believe that they were trying to see the mind of the public and say, can you really trust this guy? He's got these past convictions. However, there is a credibility in someone wanting to save their own skin. And that's where I think that we are with Devin Archer. That's what Republicans, that's the needle they're going to have to thread with us. How much do you think, though? I mean, the guy, he had two felony charges for and a conviction for conspiracy to defraud a Native American tribe. He's blowing the whistle on all of this. He's provided a lot of receipts. I mean, that's just the thing. It's kind of hard to discount the guy's credibility when you have these receipts, right? You have the texts, you have the emails. It's really kind of difficult to call into question his credibility because you have this paperwork. You have this trail. So that's, I come back to that. But that's what the media is really going to push. And you're going to probably start to see more discussion of that if you haven't already on cable news and in the newspapers. So that's the top story we're watching. We got a lot more on that. Also with the media, CNN is still pushing coronavirus fear. I don't know if you've seen this. This was over at Pajamas Media. This was pretty wild. I saw the tweet about this. They said, quote, time to stock up on tissues, bingeable TV options, and COVID-19 tests. Many signs are pointing to a COVID-19 summer surge, although one that's less far intense than what emerged the past few summers. So they're trying to say, oh, there's going to be a Or it could be like a summer cold. Like I have allergies. Like you guys know I have allergies. I'm on the struggle bus all the, like, especially late summer, fall. And I have it right now. But I like the way my voice sounds lower. The way that CNN talks about it, everything's COVID. You got the sniffles. It's COVID. Did you sneeze? COVID. Everything's COVID. Did you stub your toe? It's COVID. Probably COVID. Did you break your arm? COVID. I mean, everything's COVID. They're still pushing this fear in 2023. And I think that people are going to be a lot less receptive to this. Even, I think, maybe the far left. Are there still the masking people? Do you still have those people out there?
I've seen them.
Really?
Yeah.
Like around Texas?
Yeah. I was walking in the park Friday morning.
And whoa. Kane, you were walking in the park Friday morning.
And a woman was walking the park fully masked.
Outside.
In the park.
It's hot outside.
It was hot.
Sun and all that.
Yeah.
With a mask on.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, wow. We have culture on the way as well. We're going to get into the Uniparty. We've got energy. Ford's losing billions making EVs that almost no one wants. No one's happier about this than me. Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188. 887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Rand Paul is referring Fauci to the DOJ for criminal prosecution over claims about gain of function research. Well, because the dude lied. I mean, he lied. He said, Paul said that it, quote, it directly contradicts everything that he said in committee hearing to me. So he announced that he formally sent the criminal referral to the DOJ. You know, the DOJ is not going to do anything, which is why 2024 is so incredibly important. Just saying. America's military, Wall Street Journal, trails Russia and China in the race for the melting of the Arctic. So they said that the U.S. is competing with a partnership between the two countries, but has fewer icebreakers and ports and less experience. And so it's up in the Bering Sea. They're talking about these vessels that are traversing frigid waters, etc. And it's another area in which we're kind of falling behind. Thinking of traveling to Europe. Well, you got to say goodbye to permissionless travel. So you have to have a visa to visit Europe in 2024. And Europeans who've been to Cuba are discovering they cannot come to the U.S., apparently. Yeah, this is a new thing that apparently is coming out. So remember, Americans and residents of 62 other countries, it's called the Schengen area of the EU. You're going to have to pay a fee and submit an online application, including biometric information, work experience, medical conditions, and an initial itinerary. So I would have to do more. Like if we go to Italy next year, I would have to do more instead of just having, you know, you got to do all of this other stuff in addition to this. Then you got to pass a criminal and security background check before you can go. And that is the European Travel Information and Authorization System. It's going to be €7 per application. We'll talk more about that coming up. We got a lot more on the way. Don't go anywhere. Stick with us. You've heard me rave about the Kel-Tec KSG shotgun for a long time. And the fact is, I cannot say enough good things about it. I mean, the KSG is the one that started it all, made ordinary shotguns obsolete, and still reigns supreme. But the big reason I keep raving about it is I'm also the proud owner of one, at least. And trust me, I really put the KSG to the test before adding it to my collection. It's perfect for home defense or tactical situations. And this 12 gauge is a reliable go-to that's easy to handle for everyone. The KSG shotgun is the first 12 gauge pump action shotgun chambered for 3-inch shells and with dual tube magazines, offers a capacity of 12+1. Its downward shell ejection makes the KSG truly ambidextrous and ejects shells away from your face. It's compact, lightweight, and easy to maneuver and control. Learn more about the KSG shotgun at KelTecWeapons.com and follow Kel-Tec on social media. Visit KelTecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
I have 7 grandkids, 4 of them, all 5 of them, talk on the phone, you know, every day. I either text him or call him.
Does he text or call Navy Joan? No, he does not. He actually said 7th grandkids. Okay, so welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. All right, so a number of observations here. So they finally, in a People magazine interview on a Friday in the summer, they dropped this finally. And then he ran away to go on vacation for 10 days. So they're kind of acknowledging this, sort of. They're acknowledging it. The seventh grandchild, Navy Joan. Yeah, the polls were bad. They were bad enough for. Can you imagine being somebody's grandkid and you grow up and you realize that the only time that your grandparents acknowledged you was when the polling forced them to? It's sad. You can't say that this isn't anyone's business. I reject that so bad. I'm so tired. Look, guys, don't sell yourself short here. And on the Republican side, too, do not sell yourself short. You are the bosses. We're the boss. So when you have a politician auditioning for a job, hell yes, their personal life factors into it. Why? Because ours does. You're talking about someone who has the ability to send your kids to war. Our personal lives matter in this. So theirs do, too. It's all fair game. These are the same people that want to control what your kids read in school, but oh my gosh, don't you dare talk about what they do with their kids. Oh, H-A-I-L, no. That's not how this works. And in addition, what was one of the things that he always campaigned on? Being this like family man, right? He always campaigned on being this family man. Oh, family. He sounds like Riddick. Family. It's about family. Chronicles of Riddick. He sounds like that. Sounds like Vin Diesel saying it over and over again. That's what he's campaigned on. He's campaigned on that. So you can't suddenly, you know, takesies, backsies. It's not how this works. You can't say, oh, no. I ran on family and I made a big deal about it. But now you can't talk about it because it's inconvenient for me. You can't talk about it. So now he admits he has 7 grandkids because the polling was bad. Like, for 4 years, he's been saying that he has 6. Now he's like, well, 7. And he's doing it because of public perception, not because he really feels like this kid's family. And they say that love all of them the same. Just not enough to make sure that, you know, she's got, you know, a good education and she's going to be set for life. The whole reason this even became a story in the first place is because Hunter Biden fought tooth and nail to take any accountability for this little girl. Let's not forget how this started. This didn't start because Republicans found something out. I think that people would have been, and honestly, I wouldn't have found a lot to criticize about it if they said, you know what? Sometimes things happen and we got a 7th grandchild and we don't care how we got her. We love her all the same. Nobody would have batted an eye. And I tell you something, if that had been their line, and Republicans would have criticized it, there would have been other Republicans criticizing those Republicans for criticizing it. And you all know that's true. This is one of the dumbest errors I've ever seen in politics. If they came out and just said, yes, things happen, and we love this little girl all the same, and that's just, you know, the way it is, you know, it's kind of, you know, not the path we would have chosen, but we would have chosen to have a 7th. You know, I mean, if they would have just said it like that, boom. Done. But Hunter, I mean, you're talking about the stupidest family in politics. The only reason that the Bidens are successful this far is because other people cover their butts. And the only reason that other people cover for them is because they have to for the health of the Democrat Party at large. I have no idea how this guy's gotten as far as he has. I really honestly don't. I mean, does he network well with other Democrats? I mean, I got to ask because he doesn't make good decisions and his son doesn't either. So as I said, the whole reason that this became a big thing is because Hunter fought it tooth and nail in court. And this woman, and I got to give her credit, this London Roberts lady, she was not making this a big deal at first. This was a private thing because you guys don't realize this had been going on for like 2 years before y'all found out about it. She was doing the right thing. She wouldn't, and then she wouldn't even making a big deal of it for the family. She was just trying to make sure that her daughter was taken care of. And that Hunter Biden, you know, if you're going to do the act, then you got to take responsibility for what may happen after. And he fought it. He didn't want to claim paternity. She had to force him to take a paternity test. Surprise, you're the dad, or not surprise. And then he fought over, he didn't want to pay child support. He didn't want to have anything to do with her. He didn't even want to go to court. They had to threaten him. How many times did they threaten him with jail if he didn't show up in court? I mean, I think every time. I think they had to threaten him with contempt of court and threaten to jail him every time to get him there. And then finally, literally just late last month, they got him to agree to actually give a little bit to her. She gets to pick one of his stupid paintings out that aren't worth anything. They're only worth something if you're laundering money through them. Meanwhile, his other kids live in the White House. They have these big weddings on the White House grounds. They went to the best private schools, the best Ivy League universities. And this little girl in Arkansas, she gets to pick one of dad's stupid paintings. And the mom wasn't asking for a ton of stuff either. She wasn't asking for millions of dollars. She was just saying, can you take care of your kid? The judge looks at this and he sees the way this child is being treated and cared for, and then compares that to the standard of living for the other kids, because that's what courts do when they evaluate these cases. And so that is what fueled the asking of more, because you got to have your equal treatment of kids here. And he was resentful, and he still sounds resentful. And and the idea that the Bidens went along with this, if I was Joe Biden and my kid was not acknowledging, I would have beaten his ass on the south lawn of the White House, and I would have invited every camera there to do it. I would have said, oh, we got a big announcement coming up. Then I would have brought my kid out there and whooped him on the lawn with a belt. Big, thick one. Like grandpa style, right? Insane. They could have, this didn't have to be a deal at all. This hurt him in the poll. It hurt him with their base. This is how dumb this is. It hurt him with his own base. It is so goofy that it had to go this far, but it's stupid Hunter. Like, he's threatening to sue people. All the media outlets that were showing like the photos that he left. You know, he was going after the laptop guy, the computer repair shop owner, except for the fact that he literally signed the contract that said, if I don't come and get this stupid thing after 6 months, then, you know, I forfeit ownership and the ownership goes to the computer repair shop. He signed it. And who leaves a laptop for six months? Is that guy a free storage unit? I don't think so. I mean, this is just a bunch of stupid errors that they're it's just maddening. Absolutely maddening. All right, for some of the 2024 stuff, Iowa's going to be featuring big. Everybody's got to win Iowa, and a lot of it's going to come down to Iowa. I will caution you about some of the polls out there. New York Times had a poll out about Republican primary. Do you trust the New York Times? Are we suddenly going to trust the newspaper that was leading the way with Russian collusion? Think about this. There are operatives out there, and I'm not dogging any campaign. I'm just asking you to look at the consistency here. You do have some surrogates like the Trump campaign. Oh, look at this New York Times poll. You mean the New York Times that tried to bury you? Literally just like, and still tries to bury? I don't understand. What? What are we doing here? First off, national polls matter nada right now. The only polls that matter are New Hampshire and Iowa. And when you get down to polling strictly in New Hampshire and Iowa, it is a very different picture. Very different picture. When you look at who's losing enthusiasm and when you look at who is actually losing support because the polling has been changing week after week. And these are likely, but although I don't think every single one of these polls actually meets the criteria for inclusion in the debates, I think it does kind of paint an interesting picture. At least it should inform campaigns as to what they need to do. So Iowa's one of those places where retail politics still matter, meaning going there and kissing the babies and shaking the hands and eating a corn dog. Everybody's got to go there and eat a corn dog. And you got to go there. There was one surrogate that was going off because I think it was the DeSantis campaign. And then there were a couple of other Republican campaigns where, you know, the candidates were having a beer with people. And people were like, oh, my gosh, can you believe they're having a beer while they're on the campaign trail? First off, stop it. I can't stand it when I see people say that. And then I've seen them drunk in bars at CPAC. Like the same people that were saying some of this stuff, I have seen them be a drunken mess at bars at CPAC. Let's just get that straight. Kane knows what I'm talking about, too. I mean, one day I'll write a book Oh my gosh. But I'll do it right before I kick the bucket, man. Maybe it's in a draft form already. We don't know. But I'm just saying, I just think it's weird that I see some people say that. I'm like, they had and beer. Shh. They're talking to people. Come on. But 2024, Iowa and New Hampshire, this is what it's going to come down to. And I think, like I said, Iowa's where traditional retail politics come into play, because people in Iowa, people in New Hampshire, but particularly people in Iowa, they want to see you. They want to talk to you. They want to go to your barn, whatever barn you're having your thing in, and they want to hear you talk. They want to ask you questions. It matters there a lot. So this is going to be ongoing. They're having their Iowa State Fair. That's when the Corn Dog Palooza is going to happen. My favorite thing about that is, who gets the most awkward photo of a corn dog? That's the, honestly, can I be real? That is the only reason I look at the pictures of the Iowa State Fair with Republican politicians, because everyone has to, all the candidates got to go and they got to eat a corn dog. And then it's all, who gets the most awkward photo? And then it becomes a meme. I think Rick Perry got it two times in a row, didn't he? I think he got it twice in a row. I think Jeb Bush got one. I don't know if I've seen Trump eating a corn dog. Is he a corn dog eater?
I don't know.
But everybody's got to get that corn dog picture. But those are the polls that matter right now. Nothing else matters. Nothing else, especially I think the New York Times stuff. Look, I'm not going to sit here and take seriously entities that tried to undermine a free and fair election from 2016 with Russian collusion stuff. And I don't think you need to pay much mind into those two. National polls aren't going to matter until next year. I mean, literally, probably not till March of next year. Everything that matters right now are the state-by-state polls of the primaries and caucuses in order of them having them. And Iowa's an early state. They're the first, so that's Iowa is what everybody's looking at Iowa. So we're going to, as we go through this week, we'll start looking at some of the polling, only of some of the earlier states. But here's why I don't want to focus on it too much. We're still 5 months out from those. You see what I'm saying? We're still a long way out from that. Everyone is trying to expedite this. And I don't want you to feel dismayed or stressed. You shouldn't even feel argumentative. Let the operatives be the jerks. Okay? Let them be the jerks. Let them do their job. All these people that are super ignorant about it online, they're getting paid. Okay? All of them. They're getting paid. Let them do their jobs. And you just chill. And you just enjoy the rest of your summer, because the first votes ain't even cast for half a year. Every day we hear about another familiar brand undermining their customers and going, quote, woke. Americans are sick and tired of having far-left propaganda jammed into every product they consume. And for years, they've dumped millions into far-left causes, and everybody had to kind of take it because you needed a cell phone and probably thought that there was no alternative. Well, there is, and that's Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offering dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to in your area, minus the far-left propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending a message that you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, our military, veterans, and first responders. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code DANA and ask about their coverage guarantee while you're there. Get the same dependable service and take a stand for your values. Make the switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Patriot.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
For sustainable aviation fuels. That's where it's going to come from. By the way, mark my words, next 20 years, farmers are going to provide 95% of all the sustainable airline fuel.
And then, who's going to be growing the food? Gosh, this is Atlas Shrugged. If you've never read that giant book, I know it's a giant book. But when you start really, when you really get into it, it goes quick because it's brilliant. But that's literally where we are right now. Oh, my gosh. Like, to the letter, that's where we are. We're going to eat. We're going to burn our food and eat fuel. Is that what we're going to do? Here's some gas. So tasty. You okay? No. So he's talking about moving everything to ethanol, ultimately, right?
Pretty
Oh, man. Which is not good. I hate that. I hate ethanol. Okay, so this is where Iowa's going to turn on me right now. I hate ethanol. I don't like big corn. I don't like none of that stuff. I don't like any of that. You know why? Because it's not good fuel. It's bad and it's goofy. If you look at all of the restrictions that we have for transportation where it concerns fuel consumption, etc., all of the, what do they call it? The energy efficient. What do they call it, though, with the cars? The not energy efficient.
Fuel efficient?
The environmental standards that they have.
E85?
It's actually worse. I mean, you end up purchasing more gas.
Yeah.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. So, I don't know. We've got that. We got some interesting sound bites for you today. Now, we're following that Devin Archer hearing. I've got some culture for you. I do. I have a little culture for you. We're going to get into some of the latest with the Marxist battle in culture. NBC News said that camping was apparently racist. The Barbie movie has a unintentional whiteness. Sidebar. I have three conservative girlfriends who went to see the Barbie movie because they had their older daughters were going and they didn't want their daughters to go. They were like, no, we're going to be there when you watch this trash. And they didn't hate it. And I'm really confused. I also think that you shouldn't take other people's word for it. So that's why I'm wondering, is it actually like an unintended mockery of the failure of feminism? It's making me curious. I'm not going to see it in a theater, but if it streams, I may. I'm curious about it. We're going to get into all of that and more. Stick with us. More in store, second hour on the way.
Well, I do believe we are at this point. An inquiry is different from an impeachment vote and is another tool in the toolbox. But I will tell you, every time we walk the plank, we are putting moderate members, members that won Biden won districts, we are putting those seats at risk for 2024. We are putting the majority at risk. And it's not just impeachment that does that. Other issues like abortion, et cetera, also put those members on the plank.
So that's Nancy Mace. I disagree with her on that. She's discussing the Biden. She says impeaching Biden puts the GOP majority at risk. I promise you that not doing what you need to do is going to put the GOP majority at risk. Welcome back to the program. Top of the second hour with you, Dana Loesch here. You can listen across the country. You can also stream the program on YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV as well. I understand the sensitivity of those seats that are in purple areas, particularly the blue wall states that Trump lost to Biden in 2020. And where polling now for Republicans is more competitive than it should be, I think. But the point, I understand it. However, what that tells me is when I see Republicans that are out there and they're worried about going through this process, There's two things that come to mind. First off, this is not what Kevin McCarthy is talking about. And some people are criticizing him for this. But what Kevin McCarthy is talking about is the process that Democrats ignored. So there was no impeachment inquiry with Trump. I mean, they were just like, we don't like him. Let's go. They had no criminal charges, no nothing. They just went ahead and did it. So it's like a meaningless, it's like a very pyrrhic victory. It's a very meaningless thing. You got this public perception, but without an actual penalty, really, except to say that, you know, they impeached him, but for nothing, because, again, there was no criminal charge. What Republicans are talking about doing is with the inquiry, you know, having an actual investigation, you go through and you discover the actionable offenses that then can be, you can actually enforce those as a penalty upon impeachment. So that's what they're doing it the correct way. And I think Mace needs, and other Republicans who are nervous about that, they need to realize that there's a way to do it and there's a way to not do it, and this is the way to do it. Now, that said, talking about some of these Republicans in these purple seats, you're always going to have that issue. You're always going to have that issue, whether it's with this or anything else. You could, the impeachment is a variable. If you go too hard on energy, you're going to put these people's seats at risk. If you go too hard on life, you're going to put these people's seats at risk. If you go too hard on Second Amendment, you're going to put these people's seats at risk. If you go too hard on the economy, you're going to put these people's seats at risk. Stop worrying about putting their seats at risk and put more effort into worrying about how you're going to refine your messaging to bring these people on board and get them to agree with you. Because it comes down to it, it's all a messaging issue. It's a messaging issue. And there's a ton of common ground where those exact voters in those purple areas, that's why they're purple, They agree with you on issues where Democrats fail. And those are the areas that you should actually be focusing on and exploiting instead of worrying about, oh, it's going to put the majority at risk. I'm so tired of everyone tucking their tail between their legs and being on defense. Go on offense. Go on offense and hit so hard that people don't even have time to get it together to hit you back. That's how you do it. So I reject that whole thing. You know, we were talking about this little earlier, too. Because there were people, they were mad, like I said, that the House isn't going full on into the impeachment process, but they're doing the inquiry. And they've already decided on it, and they're doing it, and they're going about it the right way. Now, some people were saying, no, when you're dealing with these types of people, you got to play dirty, et cetera, et cetera. I so disagree with you, and I will, again, I use the example of the founders. I go back to John Adams. We could have played dirty with the Redcoats after the Boston Massacre. We could have played dirty with the Redcoats there. But we realize that you can't compromise what you say that you are for the purpose of leveling the playing field with an ideological opponent, even if it is. And if you want to have a discussion, well, that's the just thing to do. Well, the just thing to do also is to have the inquiry. Got it. You can't have it both ways. To uphold what we are and what we say we're going to do, we have to do it the right way. Because if we don't honor the Constitution and if we don't honor the process that we have spent a lot of lip service defending, then the process doesn't exist. And that's what John Adams was arguing. You know, he was saying, look, you know, that's great. You want to string these redcoats up. I get it. But we have due process in this country. We're trying to form a republic based upon, you know, a cornerstone of that is due process, and we have to have due process even for them. And so he took the unenviable task of defending them. I think that was one of the biggest intellectual battles, I think, of the War of Independence and within the Revolution, because it was a true test of, did we really believe what we said, what we were saying? Did America, because everyone was watching us. France, who was helping us and descending into a hellscape because of the efforts they were expending in helping us. Britain was watching us to see how serious we were. Spain was, everybody was watching us. How serious were we? Our own colonists were watching us. How serious were we about these principles that we were espousing? How serious were we about the things that we were declaring? And this was a true test of that. And Adams stood up and did it. And he got so much heat. But here's the thing. He was so good during the trial. And he was so factual. And he kept to the facts that even after, there was no criticism for him. Because he was so adherent to the principles that he said that we uphold. And people, they say, throw principles by the wayside. Not even Machiavelli did that. He didn't even throw principles to the wayside. He still kept them, but he did other things. People, we gotta be smarter than this. You know, you can't say that you're for something while at the same time showing the entire country that you're not. And plus, this is the way to go about it. Because there are actual penalties here. There's actual evidence. There is so much evidence that you can't not have an inquiry. Why wouldn't you want to go and actually get a charge? That's the thing. Don't sacrifice the opportunity to get charges because you just want to do what Democrats did to Trump. They went in without nothing. We actually have things. So that's what they want to do. And I think that's good. And I encourage them to do it. And they need to stay on course with that. All right. So some of the 2024 stuff. My friend Byron Donalds was defending against the accusation that because this was still going on, I was really disappointed in some of the lawmakers that were coming out. And look, I'm going to be real honest. A lot of them, all of them, this might make you mad, but it's nonetheless true. I'm just telling you, right? I'm just telling you as it is. The ones that are coming out being very critical have all endorsed Trump. So I do think that you can't discount that. I don't like the fact that we have now a media created racial animosity that is now surrounding specifically only Florida's Department of Education. When you have other states whose educational standards, apparently no one's paying attention to the same thing that's in that, but whatever. It's just because Florida's in play because of DeSantis. So I want you to listen to this because Byron Donalds was on, doubled down on some of the stuff that he was saying, sort of. He was trying to walk some of it back, but also, I think, trying to keep up the appearance that he was doubling down. This was cable news talk show circuit. Listen to this, audio soundbite one.
I don't agree with Kamala Harris. She's tried to play politics with this, and that's what she wanted to do. Let's move her to the side, because she's really not the issue at this point. When it comes to our standards, they're not controversial. Let's establish that for something as well. If you go through the standard set, they are reasonable, they are appropriate, they are robust. Children in Florida will learn Black history, and they'll do a good job with it.
Okay, well, sounds like he was kind of walking it back a little bit. He was saying that he doesn't agree with her. I understand that it's probably very troubling for anyone to realize that they just said something that Kamala Harris had said. I mean, I don't know how you say that you don't agree with someone when she says one thing about something and you said the exact same thing about that something, and it's basically the same thing over that something. That's agreement. Now, that being said, you can't temper that by saying, oh yeah, by the way, they're good, robust, and accurate, blah, 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 blah. I mean, that's, you know, kind of, I think that Republicans are terrified to compete in terms of agenda. I think they are. I was reading this thing about how every state that's GOP controlled promotes green energy. CCP controlled green energy. And then DeSantis and Republicans, well, he vetoed an electric vehicle bill from the Republican legislature. Probably didn't earn him any allies there. But they didn't want CCP to have any more of a foothold in Florida. Here we had implementation in Florida, enforcing employment laws against illegal entrants. And they stood up to biomedical security. Republicans have got to stop being terrified of narratives. This was a narrative. Look, it is wild to me that you have this standard that's across the board in other states, but Kamala Harris only specifically actually targeted Florida and flew down to Florida to make a big deal out of it. Because the AP standards, that's the standard, the old AP standard that the new standards basically quote. That old AP standard is in all of the states, by the way. Why did she just pick Florida and fly to Florida and go do this? Do you see what I'm saying? And then you have these other Republicans that join in on it. Do you see how petty and stupid this is now? This is level ignoring Navy Jones stupid. It's an unforced error. This is no victory for anybody's for that campaign. It's actually, and it ended up hurting Republicans because now you have the media trying to foment this whole racial animosity stuff. No, she specifically singled out Florida to go do this. And you had all these people that were so eager to use this as a political cudgel in a primary that they jumped in it. And I don't care if somebody's a supporter of Trump and they're a politician, I don't care, but you're still racially pandering. Let's be honest about this. This is racial pandering, the type of pandering that we opposed in 2016 against the Republican nominee. It was the type of pandering that we opposed in 2020 against the Republican nominee. Why are we allowing it in the Republican primary? Because we're taking media's bait? For what purpose? Don't be mindlessly led into becoming a weapon against your own best interests, your own side. So that's the problem here. Now, we have a whole bunch of stuff coming up because I got some Iowa, South Carolina polling. Like I said, I'm only going to touch on it. I'm not going to obsessively focus on it because we're still 5 months out from votes. And I think that's dumb. But I'm just going to put it on your radar. And also, Pee Wee Herman, dead. I know, Pee Wee Herman has passed away. It was announced, like they announced it on his social media. And Variety announced it. Paul Rubens, best known for portraying Pee Wee Herman, passed away age 70. We'll have more on that coming up. That's sad. I used to watch Pee-wee's Playhouse literally every Saturday morning. I did. You know, Lawrence Fishburne got his start on there.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, Paul Reubens, best known as Pee-wee Herman, and also best known to some people as a guy who got caught in a movie theater, you know, with some stuff, dealing with some things. He's passed away at age 70 after he had cancer. He had a private bout of cancer, according to Variety. He was 70 years old. He was in Big Top Pee-wee, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. He also played a character in Nightmare Before Christmas. He had the Pee-wee's Playhouse, the Pee-wee Herman Show. He was in Mystery Men. He was in all kinds of stuff. So he's 70. I didn't know he was 70 years old. Dang, 70 years old. It just doesn't seem like he was that old. Anyway, trucking giant Yellow. They've finally shut down. This is the 99-year-old company. They had 30,000 staff, 12,000 rigs. They've ceased operations immediately despite a $700 million coronavirus bailout. The Nashville-based company has struggled with debt and union woes. Each side blamed the other for the announcement that came yesterday for their immediate close. It's the biggest collapse in terms of revenue and jobs for the trucking industry. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. So they said it's they first reported the shutdown of this as well. Man, that is kind of, that's wild. It's 30,000 jobs. I wonder what that's. This California there. So apparently beavers have always been viewed as a nuisance, but now they're California. This is a headline. California aims to tap beavers. Once viewed as a nuisance to help with water issues and wildlife. This is Archer going phrasing. So they've changed. They're trying to have the animals basically help them and lure them into urban areas with enhanced groundwater supplies and a buffer against the threat of wildfires because they want to preserve them along with their nature. Oh, they're just now figuring out that it's nature friendly. Yeah. You know, I always thought those people were such big, you know, they're environmentalists. That's why, not conservationists. So they don't know this stuff. There's the difference. A woman was suspected of huffing and caused a vehicle to explode. I don't even know how this happens, but that's what she did. Sturbridge Police Department crews were sent. It was near a Walmart. They found a vehicle that had all the glass blown out of it because she was huffing and she had a cigarette by her. Dumb move. Stick with us. We got more in store next.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
Agriculture contributes about 33% of all the emissions of the world, depending a little bit on how you count it, but it's anywhere from 26 to 33. And we can't get to net zero. We don't get this job done unless agriculture is front and center as part of the solution. And you just can't continue to both warm the planet while also expecting to feed it. Doesn't work. So we have to reduce emissions from the food system to keep the 1.5 degrees alive.
You guys heard what I heard, right?
Yeah.
Man, you know where I feel like I've heard this before sometime, like I've read about this or something like in history. Oh, that's right. Mao with the Great Famine. That was entirely man-made. Welcome back to the program. Bottom of the second hour. That was John Kerry, in case you knew who his voice was. You knew John Kerry saying that we got to get rid of farmers and farms if we want to get to net zero. Net zero? Yeah, net zero for carbon emissions. That's what he wants. Net zero for carbon. Can you? Okay. Yeah.
Why does he hate plants and trees?
Food. Why does he hate food?
That too.
I mean, you heard, right? We all heard what he just said. He said that we need to produce less food. Produce less food. That's literally what he just said. And he said to stop the world from overheating, we got to start with farms, produce less food. So that means he wants to starve people. That's what are you going to do to make up for the food? Any ideas? Where do you get it from?
Laboratories.
That's why they all want us to eat bug meat. No thanks. You know what? Honestly, can I just say something to an aside and I'm going to come back on topic? I can't hardly eat seafood anymore. Because of this. The moment they started talking about eating bugs, that's when I realized that old joke that, yeah, it most seafood, like your shrimp and your lobster, that's bug meat. I don't want to eat bug meat anymore. Why is that a delicacy? Just because it's not totally easy to get for everybody? Like you can't just walk outside and get some? I don't know. Now I just don't want any of it. I can't hardly eat it. I think I'm developing an actual aversion to it. Like fish I can eat, but shellfish, not that I'm not allergic or anything. I just cannot stomach it. I can't deal with it because of this. I think the patriot DNA that I have from being an American. And by the way, when you become a citizen of the country, there's a magical thing that happens. Like your DNA changes. I don't know if you knew this or not. Like it's something the founders didn't really totally want to put in our founding documents, but, and you like start getting rowdy. You start getting just a tad bit ungovernable. And then it grows, you know, as you mature over time, it grows, you know, your ungovernableness grows. Anyway, I can't hardly, am I alone in thinking that? Is that weird, Kane? I just look at it. I'm like, bug meat. No, no, thanks.
Mm-mm. No, I mean, that's not weird at all. I mean, that's the way it was back in the day, that it was the cheapest food out there.
Mm.
And then somehow it just became more expensive and people thought, oh, maybe we should eat that.
Yeah. All I know is that whenever I'm in the Caribbean, like if we go to the Exumas or Bahamas, like all the fishermen, you know what they use to get like the biggest conch, C-O-N-C-H, like conch shells and that? Because that actually is tasty. The conch salad is one of my favorite foods. You know what they use? They use lobster as their bait. And I was joking with one of these fishermen. I'm like, my gosh, you use what people would pay $50 for in the United States. And he goes, and I swear to you, hands this guy. He goes, ha, it's bug meat. I just about died. It's like, yeah. But no, I look at it like that now after this whole thing. I'm like, I don't know. But he's talking about getting rid of food. Imagine that you're, well, don't. This guy flies private. He likes to lie about it and say that he doesn't, but he does. His family owns a jet. But you can't pay attention to him. This is for you, the little people. Think about how terrifying that is, what he just said. No, we have to burn more. We have to use our food. We have to get rid of our food so that we can get to net zero. So two things in there that are terrifying. Getting rid of the food, number one. And then number two, net zero. There's no possible way to get to net zero ever. Ever. By the way, my rental car, my EV, it's back. I got my car, or not my rental car, my loaner. I got my regular gas guzzler back. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was so wonderful driving to church and just hearing the boom, 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 boom. I miss that. It was amazing. I mean, it was, you know, first world problems. I had the EV for like and a day. It was like nothing. But yeah, I just cannot imagine what that would look like, a net zero carbon emissions world. It can't exist. That's an unlivable world. Think about everything that the things that you use that are actually made with that has carbon emission output. Net zero is not a realistic thing. John Kerry is a cradled generation. I mean, you want to talk about generational wealth? Why is it all Democrat? Didn't he come from the Forbes family? Isn't like one of his parents from the Forbes family? He's a generationally rich dude who married a woman whose late husband was the Heinz ketchup founder, or from the Heinz family. So he came from a rich family and married into a rich family. He has no idea. I mean, the people that bear the brunt of all of this, these vanity, compassionate vanity exercises that these people get involved in, it's all the middle class and struggling people. They're the ones who bear the brunt of this. Net zero. That's a terrifying thing. Yeah, and he said, 5 years we'll have the first ice-free Arctic summer? That's so stupid.
Back in 2009, he said that.
Yeah, he said that too. Yeah. He's a moron. Why is he? He's the climate czar? But he was never
elected? No.
Well, not elected, but there was never any kind of hearing for him or confirmation for him, correct? Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, that's super weird. Good heavens. All right, so I've got a couple of things to hit, including this one that I just came across from The Hill. Have you heard that there are a couple of different surveys out, and one of them gets into how high school boys are trending conservative? They said that there's a Monitoring the Future survey. There are a couple of other surveys. 12% of the girls, I think, in one, they're talking about in this, the share of 12th grade girls who identified as liberal rose from 19% in 2012 to 30 in 2020. Only 12%, according to another survey administered by the University of Michigan, identified as conservative. So young women are trending liberal, but the men are trending conservative. Now, they said that in some instances, they're reluctant to pick a side publicly, a 2022 Monitoring the Future survey. One of the things that I'm looking at, because they always say, well, what about the progressive drift of young women? I don't like to say the word liberal. And everyone wants to be like, oh, well, it's because, you know, the Trump presidency mobilized women, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't matter. Like, they say that about every Republican. It doesn't matter who the Republican is. They said it about George W. Bush. They've said it about everybody. They get into why then the drift of young men to the conservative side. I honestly think it's kind of a reaction to the women, and particularly society, that has denigrated men for like how many generations now? But I do think that there are some that are kind of like fake masculine and like fake, because I think Jordan Peterson is, you know, somebody interesting for young men to read. I don't think, gosh, I don't want to, you know what I call this one dude? What is it, that Andrew Tate? Andrew Tate? I call him, I like to say Andrew. It's a name. That kind of stuff is like fake masculinity, because you have a guy espousing progressive values while pretending to be hyper masculine, and it's just a beta production. But I do think that a lot of it is a reaction to the hyper radicalism of third wave feminists. But at the same time, you notice, I wonder how there haven't been really any studies of the chasm between third wave feminists and then the women who are reacting to all of the trans stuff. Because one of the things that we talked about last week is that, like, kind of during this discussion that we were having about, is the Barbie movie like is it an unintended put down of feminism, or unintended acknowledgement of third wave feminism's failure, which I think if it is, then it was done by accident. But there is nothing left to feel oppressed or suppressed by when it comes to women. So we've, like, third wave feminists have taken to putting dudes in skirts and then claiming that there's some kind of new thing about which to feel suppressed. And I'm wondering, because you've seen people like J.K. Rowling, who are progressive. I don't even identify her as being liberal. When I hear the word liberal, I think of classical liberal, which ultimately is a conservative, because classical liberalism, words have meanings, and people who are ignorant have no concept of words having meanings or history or anything else. They decide to bastardize all this stuff. That I'm thinking of, like, Tocqueville. I'm thinking of, like, actual classical liberal, think like classical education. So I don't want to say that she's liberal. She's progressive, meaning I think she's socialist light. But she looks like a super conservative compared to some of these third wave feminists out there who don't just stop at the appropriation of the female sex. They go for the appropriation of everything, including what someone earns. So I think that hasn't been any kind of deep dive into that chasm. And I'm wondering how that's going to trend out in like 10 years time, and whether that's going to have an effect, because you see all of these young women coming up, and the trans issue this activism has become such a big thing that where are people left to go when they're what is there left? I mean, I'm wondering why or if more women are going to start trending conservative because of that, as a reaction against that. Because I think the reason that dudes are trending conservative is specifically a reaction against the radicalism of third wave feminism, almost more than anything else. I don't think that there's any influencer that's contributing to it. I don't think like Peterson's contributing to it. I don't think you can attribute it to Trump. I don't think you can attribute it to anything else except the collapse of third wave feminism. I think that's what men are reacting to. But, and it's easy for people to say that they're reacting to one thing or another so that they can give an explanation for it, because heaven forbid they indict themselves, right? Oh gosh, we made you this. Heaven forbid they indict themselves. We have Florida Man on the way. And we also have another, a third hour of the program on the way. Stephen Yates is going to join us.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Some people during a bad economy, you know, they get a second job. And some people just try to figure out ways that they can expand their first job to make some more cash, right? So that is what this Florida man did. The candy man busted for selling drugs out of a snack truck. He told police that he began selling fentanyl, cocaine, marijuana, and psilocybin mushrooms from his snack truck to offset the bad economy in St. Lucie County, Florida. This poor St. Lucie. They arrested this guy called the candy man after a sting revealed that he was selling drugs out of his mobile snack food truck. And so they found 10,000 fentanyl pills. It's $300,000 street value. All kinds of cocaine, THC wax, drug pill presses, guns, all kinds of stuff. So he was charged with 22 drug-related crimes, including trafficking in a number of different types of drugs, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, possession of drug equipment, all kinds of stuff. So he's, and use of a two-way communication device to facilitate a felony. So he got charged with a whole bunch of stuff out of a snack truck.
Bidenomics.
There you go. This This is a Florida man who beat up a driver and stole his truck 2 hours after bonding out of jail. Jeez. 37-year-old Florida man of Riviera Beach, Florida. He was arrested by Fort Morgan Police Department for trespassing at a hotel. He was booked in a Morgan County jail, posted a $1,000 bond. And then literally 2 hours later, he stole this dude's truck, carjacked him, I guess, assaulted the driver, took the keys. And the owner of the truck, though, as the perp was driving away, the owner jumped into the truck bed and called 911. And so then Morgan County Sheriff's deputies, they pursued the suspect at speeds reaching 108 miles per hour. That's kind of a terrifying thing to be in the back of a truck during a high speed chase. And the pursuit finally ended when the guy rolled to a stop and was arrested. He faces six additional charges now. He's going to be in jail. He's got felony charges now. I cannot believe that guy jumped in. I'm trying to get over the fact that the guy jumped into the truck bed as this was happening. And that's kind of crazy. That's dangerous. Like, I mean, especially when they were doing those rolling, what is it? They throw the things out to spike the tires because they had to take his tires out. That's crazy. Let's see here. A Florida man stole a dredging boat, but it's called the Weeky Wachee dredging boat, to travel on the river. Grand theft of a dredging boat at Rogers Park. 35-year-old Florida man charged on Friday with theft of the boat. According to Hernando County Sheriff's Office, they said that Charles Fagerstrom, who had no address on paperwork filed with the court, they saw him Wednesday morning by workers. He was sitting on a bucket on the stolen boat eating some tater chips, you know, just chilling, according to the arrest report. He had not gotten very far down the river. Patrol deputies responded. Workers maintained visual contact. They prevented him from bringing it back to the dock or shore. And if he tried to flee, he would have been required to jump in the water to do so. So they finally took him into custody, and they read him his rights and all this stuff. And he said that he wanted to use the vessel to travel on the river because he said it was going to be a nice day. That's what he told police. So he's charged with grand theft of a vessel, possession of burglary tools, and he's in Hernando County Detention Center on a $7,000 bond. Yeah, so that didn't... I mean, he didn't make it easy. He got a very slow vessel, and then he sat out on the deck of it and was eating potato chips, staring everybody down that was watching him steal this thing. Stick with us. Third hour on the way.
Business. And it just seemed like
it was clear that it was clear that it was as part of the daily conversations that Hunter Biden had with his father. And it was and sounded like most of the time now President Biden didn't even know who the people he was at dinner. He was just asked to say hello. And he would, you know, talk about the way he described it several times. They asked over and over and over. He described what the weather was, how what's going on your end. The witness was very, very consistent that none of those conversations ever had to do with any business dealings or transactions. They were purely what he called casual conversation.
Okay, that is entirely not what I think either the Biden team have said or any of the whistleblowers have said. This is the ongoing, this is the part of the ongoing Devin Archer hearing. And that was, that soundbite came, when was that from? Just
about 15 minutes ago.
Welcome back to the show. Top of this third hour with you, Monday. Dana Lash here, your lovable curmudgeon. Make sure you also check out the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. You can stream the radio show. If you are listening to it terrestrially across the country, you can also stream it. YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. That is not at all. First off, they keep moving the goalposts. Because with, was this last week, the week before last, with Karine Jean-Pierre, it was, he didn't have business dealings with them. Oh, was it 1 week ago today? Yeah, just can I just hear KJP?
Excuse me, has evidence that the president in the past communicated directly with foreign business associates of his son Hunter Biden many times. Curious if the White House and the president still stand behind his comment that he's never been involved and has never even spoken to his son about his business.
So I've been asked this question a million times. The answer is not going to change. The answer remains the same. The president was never in business with his son. I just don't have anything else to add.
He was never in business with the son. Well, it went from talking to not being in business with his son to... Now he's never even heard Devin who? He's never even heard of him. Who's Hunter?
So there was a follow-up to that.
Let's listen to the follow-up because this is interesting. It's building into something here. Listen.
Doesn't that contradict the president's statement saying that he never talked to any of Hunter Biden business associates? Mm-hmm. Clearly he talked, whether about the weather or whatever, but he said specifically that he's never talked to them. Doesn't this contradict
him? I don't know what his comment is, and if we're going to... Well, I don't think that's what he said. He never said that he has never spoken to anyone. He said that he had nothing to do with Hunter Biden's business dealings. If he says hello to someone that he sees his son with, is he supposed to say, hi, son? Oh, no, I'm not going to say hello to the other people at the table or the other people on the phone.
Okay, that is an absolute lie that contradicts what he has said repeatedly. This was on... let me get the data. This is June 26th, where Biden again said he never spoke with any of these individuals or to his son about his foreign business dealings. He was asked that by Jackie Heinrich as he left a White House East Room event, and he yelled at her no. And this was after the text messages. Some more text messages were released, and this had to do with the Chinese government linked business. So wait. He says now they're saying that they never spoke, but then when they said they would talk to him, it was about, oh, it's about the weather. Like, how are you doing? Like, what, you know, it's sunny outside, right? Yeah. You believe this?
Not at all.
So wait, what is their defense here? Because they're all over the place. What's their defense, Kane?
Well, it sounds like their defense is that, okay, maybe he said stuff, but it was just about weather. It was just casual conversation. And it wasn't about anything involving business, although the emails would indicate otherwise.
Mm. Oh, yeah, they would. The emails would totally indicate otherwise. Nobody believes that. Nobody believes anything that they're saying, by the way. Not a single thing. It wasn't that. They weren't talking about anything other than the weather. Humid, right? Yeah, totally humid. Yeah, thanks for calling. Yeah, you're welcome. Let's just talk about the weather. But what it sounds like, and this is something that Juan acknowledged too on break, Biden's not going to take the fall for this. He's already said, well, he said he wouldn't pardon Hunter, which no one, literally nobody believes. Do you honestly believe that? Like, at what point, how do you go from, don't you dare talk about the president's infant baby son. He's a recovering addict and the president wants to keep him close to, well, hell no, I'm not going to pardon him. How do you go from that to that? That's a pretty big leap, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do you go from that to that? Big leap. So it sounds kind of like he's going to let him fall. Man, what a great tragedy. Okay, you want my psychologist, Dana. So I feel like, okay, messed up family, totally messed up family. Everybody was always about pushing and promoting Joe. Everyone else to hell. Everyone else's well-being, everything. It was all about Joe, right? And his first wife aided him in this. And then he got a second wife who aided him in this. And I think it was all at the sacrifice of the kids, who clearly they didn't invest any kind of time in because everybody had problems, right? So now you have Hunter Biden, who always felt second fiddle to older brother. But now he's like the only boy now. And then you got, you know, the drug addicted 40-something-year-old sister. Anyway, so now I think he went from being a party boy who didn't have any kind of responsibilities and who was just taken care of because of his last name and who his dad was. And then now he's like got to compare himself to his brother. And I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of stuff happening here that plays all into this, and that Joe Biden doesn't. I mean, how do you have all these kids that turn out with all these behavioral issues and drug problems and, you know, complete lack or disregard for manners, responsibility, decency, the law, etc., unless you're a crap dad? And now you're going to let the kid take your baby infant, some 50 something year old kid, take the fall when you were pimping him out for business? You're pimping him out. You tried to make him an extension of the VP's office by way of last name, and an extension of the presidential office by way of last name. And you're going to let him take the fall for that? Wow, dude. That's a sad little Greek tragedy that's unfolding right now, right?
Right. But that's to assume that the DOJ will actually follow through on any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think the hubris here is because they believe the DOJ won't even get it as far as Hunter needing to be pardoned. That's what I think is going to happen.
I mean, Devin Archer was saying that there were like 20-something calls that they had.
Yeah.
I mean, they all said that. Now, listen, to that point of letting him fall, can I get the text messages? Let me go back to my notes on this. Hang on. I'm pulling this up. So he's essentially saying, because Devin goes, why did your dad's administration appointees arrest me and try to put me in jail? Just curious, some of our partners are asking out here, why would they try to ruin, this is Devin Archer asking Hunter this, March 6th of 2019. Why would they try and ruin my family and destroy my kids and no one from your family's side step in at least try to help me? And he says, I'm depressed. He's like, I'm curious, so I wanted to answer, et cetera, et cetera. And Hunter basically goes, he goes, buddy, are you serious? Because there's no connection or control between the two. The same Justice Department, it can investigate and prosecute this president and his family, does for all administrations. It's democracy. Three co-equal branches of government. You're always more of, I mean, he's acting like every president's family. This is what he says. Every president's family is held to a higher standard and they're a target. It's the price of being the most powerful group of people in the world. Oh my gosh. The hubris. Gag me. I'm gagging. Oh my gosh. He actually says this. The unfairness to us allows for the greater good. That was Hunter Biden actually thought that was a good sentence, and he typed it out and sent it to Devin Archer. The unfairness to us allows for the greater good. So he's saying they're all being treated unfairly to allow for the greater good. What greater good? Well, we broke laws and they're trying to uphold the law. So that's for the great. Is that what he's saying? I mean, what is that? What is that? Talk about a God complex here. And then he goes, Devin Archer says, I'm depressed. I love you anyway. Everyone other than you sucks, including them all. And your brother was with me. And he goes, yes, he was. And I always am. And turn the discussion around, Devin. Every great family is prosecuted in the U.S. You are part of a great family. gag. They have this fetish with being a dynasty. You're Bidens, for crying out loud. You're the whitest trash family that's ever been in the White House. My family comes from the Ozarks, so I can say that. They say that, he goes, that's the way the Bidens are different, and you're a Biden. He's telling this to Devin Archer. It's a price of power. I mean, he just keeps saying the same stuff. Oh my gosh. Lorraine makes a good point. She goes, I think Joe was raised to be the face of the family, and Jim, his brother, was raised to be the bag man. So Joe raised his boys. Bo was supposed to take over for Joe and be the face. Hunter was supposed to be the bag man. And then Hunter got into drugs because he's clearly dad's second choice, spare unloved kid. And then Bo had the audacity to die, and now Joe's stuck. Yeah. That makes sense.
It does make sense.
That does make sense. Dude. So how long do we got to wait for the television drama for this? I'm like curious.
It's probably already happening.
Can you, right? Like a real legit one. I cannot believe some of the stuff that he says, that he says in this. I mean, Hunter Biden didn't care. He knew that he knew that no accountability was going to come to him, as we saw last week, clearly. And he's trying to sell Devin Archer on this too. But ultimately, he tells Devin, well, you're not me. After all this stuff with being a Biden and all that. Okay. Man. This family. And they're, no wonder the Obamas went to the Hamptons and just, got out. No wonder you don't see him anymore. Because he didn't want nothing to do with this hot mess. Like, he knows self-preservation. He at least knows self-preservation. Good heavens. I mean, chefs, not so much. But, Kane, that's so mean. You shouldn't say that. It's too soon. It's way too soon. I want to touch some of this energy stuff because the bulb ban's coming, right? Right? Do you guys know this?
Another one?
Yeah. The incandescent bulb ban.
Oh, God.
It's, you guys know this, right? Okay, so it's happening. The Energy Independence and Security Act. They were talking about phasing out incandescent light bulbs, improve lighting efficiency. So they wanted to phase them out in 2014, but apparently now it's 2023 and the ban is taking effect. The reason why it's so delayed is because they had some battles over funding. But now, going all the way back to 2012, Trump rolled back the regulations in 2019. This is why you cannot do everything by executive order. You have to actually lead and push this legislation in Congress, because if you do everything by executive order, it can be undone by executive order. So Trump rolled them back in 2019, but in 2022, Biden just reversed it. So now we have this going into effect Tuesday. Now, it's not illegal to own incandescent light bulbs, but it's illegal for stores to sell them and companies to manufacture them. I don't have enough middle fingers on my hands, guys. Somebody help me out here. I don't have enough.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
This is in Indonesia. This woman's like the toughest woman I've ever heard of. She's 38 years old, Flamira De Jesus, and she was dragged into a swamp by a crocodile. She survived 90 minutes wrestling around in its jaws before she was saved. And she's a palm oil plantation worker, and she was doing her job, and this was in Indonesia. And she was unaware that this beast was lurking beneath the foliage. This gator was beneath the foliage where she was working. And it leaped up, dragged her into the creek. And she bravely fought it off, screamed for help. Other employees rushed to her aid. There's video showing her in the pool with only her head visible. And the reptile kept trying to pull her away. And she fought this thing like crazy. I cannot even believe there's video. I can't watch the video. I cannot watch the video because it is terrifying. Because it's one of those bodies of water where it has all the foliage on top and you can only see her head. And it keeps trying to drag her and she's punching it and all that. She's hardcore, man. All I know is I hope her kids, if her kids ever act up, all she's got to do is be like, remember what happened when I was at work and I whooped that gator? Do you want to be like that? And they'll listen to her immediately. I would. She's terrifying. Let's see. This the CDC is like right next to recommending that you get your annual coronavirus shot that doesn't do anything. They're hunting around. I told you CNN was suggesting that we're going to have another big coronavirus, rebound. And now you have the CDC trying to walk near having your annual COVID shot. I don't think so. Less than a third of voters have a favorable opinion of the Justice Department. Feelings of a two-tiered system of justice have reflected heavily throughout new polling data. It's a Harvard Caps Harris poll. 32% of registered voters, eyebrow up, have a favorable view. Steve Yates joins us next. Stay with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Welcome back to the program. Bottom of this third hour, you can listen across the country, stream the radio program as well, the simulcast. You can catch the simulcast also on Channel 347 DirecTV. This is one of my favorite stories today, and I'm going to bring on my guest before our dear friend, before I have a number of things to ask him, but this one takes the cake and I got to get it out of the way or it's going to haunt me for our whole conversation. So Steve Yates, as you know, at Yatescoms, he is the senior fellow at America First Policy Institute and chair of the China Policy Initiative. He is an expert on all things China, everything happening over there. So immediately I thought of him when I saw this story. A zoo in China is forced to deny that some of its bears are actually humans in costume. And they are, I think the guy in Japan who was trying to be the border collie was a little more convincing than this. Now, I wanted to ask Steve this because if you question it in China, doesn't that like make your credit score, your behavioral credit score take a nosedive?
Well, this is an amazing story all the way around. And I know we haven't talked about it before, but I am a certified bona fide bear expert, too. Because I used to live right down the world. From Bear World, that's affiliated with Yellowstone, and they got legit bears there. And none of those bears had sort of saggy pants like this bear did in the picture. The only thing missing in this is a can of beer and a cigarette in the paw of the bear to be a dead giveaway that this is actually a human. I strongly suspect this is what happened with China's foreign minister that disappeared after having a little whoopsie-doo outside of his marriage and got caught. Now maybe someone can investigate who's inside the bear outfit, but that's my bet for now. Prove me wrong.
I mean, the crazy thing is that they have video, it's online. There was, it's on WeChat and some of the, other, Chinese social media outlets. And there are these people that are standing around this enclosure and this dude who's just standing on this rock. I mean, because that looks like a dude. I'm with you. I've never seen a bear with a saggy butt like that, just chilling, walking around on its hind legs with such ease. And the zoo said, no, it's definitely a real animal. Like, it was angry that people were asking at this. The Guardian actually has some of the video of it. And it's, I mean, you look at it and you're like, this is not a real animal. I was actually surprised they were allowed to record it. They said that not all bears, this is their answer, Steve. They said, they published this statement. They said, well, when it comes to bears, you know, not all bears are behemoths and danger personified. We Malayan bears are petite and the smallest bear in the world. That still looks like a human in a bear costume. I don't care what kind of bear it is.
Yeah, some of them just degenerate into poor humans. So I mean, now we know this is what de-evolution means. The group was ahead of its time.
I mean, this doesn't surprise you, being, you know, it's communist China.
All fakery.
Yeah,
all.
I mean, this doesn't, I mean, you're even brainwashed into thinking and into believing that people in these costumes, like in the past, they've tried to pass off dogs that have been dyed to look like African cats or wolves, and they have painted donkeys to look like zebras.
Yeah. That's true fact. And it's horrible. I mean, and but you'd think that the animal rights activists of the world would unite and just be rabidly critical of this terrible commie government. But no, they'd rather kick the good old US of A around. It's
yes.
Much easier.
Yeah, it's much easier to do that. See, this is why. OK, so we have stories like this where they have these weird things that they do and they tell their people you have to go along with it or else you might be in the costume next. You never know. But then. You have this story that I was looking at over the weekend where it says United States is hunting Chinese malware that could disrupt American military operations. So they say the Biden administration is hunting for malicious computer code that they say that they believe that China has hidden deep inside of the networks that very conveniently control our power grids, our communication systems, our water supplies, and feed military bases in the U.S. and around the world, according to apparently our military intel and NatSec officials. And they say that, you know, it's Chinese hackers probably working for the PLA that have inserted this code in just in the event that, you know, Beijing moves against Taiwan. So we have, they can't even fake out people about animals in zoos to, they can actually do this? Is that, I don't understand, or is our administration that bad?
Well, I think the consistency between these two stories is one word, and it's impunity. They can do whatever they want at home, and you better not question that's a real bear. And when they do this stuff here, I mean, really, it's been provocative weakness on the part of the United States of America that's given the worst people in the world privileged access to our institutions and our tech. And I mean, you remember what the area of Texas went through and the ice storms and then with power outages and stuff like that. You think the Chinese People's Liberation Army and the Communist Party of China were not taking notes on these kinds of things?
That's a great point.
And so we just have people in China who are joking around when it comes to the bears. And we apparently have jokers in charge of our security who can't be trusted to walk and run with scissors. And we're just letting these people run roughshod. It's horrifying to me that this is a legitimate thesis, because you'd like to believe leading the world in technology and with the world's biggest defense budget, we might have prioritized keeping the homeland safe. But our border situation kind of is the sobriety checkpoint in believing that anymore.
Jeez. I mean, we're talking with our friend Steve Yates at YatesComms on Twitter. They said that the first hints that this were happening began to emerge in May. So who knows how long that this has been in there? I can't even believe that it would happen undetected. I mean, that's what gets me.
Let me check my watch. Is it May still? I mean, this is the first we're hearing about this. Maybe they would be like on it to get everyone on alert, maybe download a new virus update or something to get to say, hey, here's some reassurance. But at this point, we're distracted with everything going on in our political circus. We think there might be a war if China invades Taiwan. But they're already here and they're hacking away.
Yeah.
And if the balloon goes up anywhere else, they're ready to shut us down.
Exactly.
That's pretty terrible.
And to think that this isn't even the first time that this has happened. I mean, I think previously what the U.S. government and even Microsoft had said, yeah, there have been, you know, some recent malware attacks and it's from Chinese state sponsored actors. But they never actually said what led them to believe, you know, what led them to come to that conclusion. But I just think that I'm just really shocked by all of this. It seems like they're just trying to figure out what weaknesses we have, so how they can destabilize or neutralize at least an immediate reaction if they ever did decide to act. I mean, I don't think it's indicative of them trying to do anything immediately, but I think they are trying to, you know, gauge their opposition and what they can expect should they do so.
If it proves to be super easy and they meet with very limited resistance, why wouldn't they go ahead? They've hacked cabinet secretaries' email systems. That was just reported in recent weeks. There was a major hack of the Office of Personnel Management budget some time back that disclosed lots of people's private information, maybe even yours truly's, who knows. They've been at this for a long time. But the answer for why this is happening is just stone cold obvious. If you think you need to be flying rainbows and talking about other kinds of wokery, guess what? And if you're going to worship the sun god and say the weather is our biggest threat, the Chinese are just going to keep tick, 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 chipping away at all this stuff. They're serious about this stuff, and we're clearly proving to be clowns.
That's a crazy irony and the wokery of all of that, but yet being asleep to all of those threats. That's wild. Speaking of China and Taiwan, new Taiwan weapons package to be announced soon. This is from Reuters, according to U.S. officials. The U.S. Didn't we talk about this like months ago when like some another $1 billion whatever package was going to Ukraine? The U.S. is expected to announce that they provided Taiwan with military assistance worth more than $300 million, and Congress has authorized up to $1 billion worth of the Presidential Drawdown Authority weapons aid for Taiwan. They said the package is going to be something like $330 million. The White House hasn't commented. The formal announcement is not expected to include the list of everything being provided, which I would imagine it would, that'd be dumb for them to do that. That seems to be a decent, that's a good move, because at least, I mean, I understand the argument for our interest with that. With Ukraine, we have no accountability. But why is there only just now this focus on Taiwan?
Yeah. Well, I have to be the skunk at the garden party. I mean, this is a way too little too late. This is literally a drop in the ocean.
Yeah.
This conflict is in the B's, not the M's, the billions, not the millions. And China's been racing in the hundreds of billions, I should say. And so you want to throw $300 million, and exactly when is this going to be delivered by the miraculous bean counter bureaucrats in our government? We fly this stuff over at lightning speed to give away to Ukraine. Good for the Ukrainians to be able to defend themselves. The Taiwanese are ready to pay for this stuff. But even with these announcements, which they will, in fact, publicize what this stuff is when it gets approved by the House, by the Congress and all that, you know, at what in what year is this little drop going to make it in? This doesn't tip the scales. We've got to get a government that gets serious about deterring conflict. For the Chinese, like I said, they keep pushing. If they meet with limited resistance, why wouldn't they go?
You bring up an interesting point, because it's a drop in the bucket. It's still going to make China mad. They're going to be infuriated over this. So why not, like, make the infuriation worth it? Like, why not then, you know, if you're government and you're talking about, you know, working with an ally that produces, you know, all the superconductor. I mean, an ally that, you know, this is, there's a lot of American interests in this area. Why not then, you know, if you're going to make them mad, then make them, make them mad, make it worth it. Make the tantrum worth it. You know, that's just how, I mean, maybe don't send anything else to Ukraine. And if you're going to send money somewhere, send it to Taiwan. And as you said, put it in the bees then.
Yeah. Well, I'm for selling it, because I think that makes
I like selling
America
it. Yes. I want to sell it.
And I also think that the market will determine who's really serious. I mean, people that are truly committed are going to appropriate the money. They'll figure out how to use it the right way. And we should go ahead and move forward. I mean, the Chinese go crazy if you just use the words they disapprove of.
Right.
So if you're going to take the ounce of pain, go in for a pound of hurt back to them.
Because not to interrupt you, but I get the impression from this Reuters piece that they would have purchased more if we would have allowed that purchase, if we would have let them.
It's been that way for a generation. This is completely bass-ackwards by the United States of America. We have put Taiwan into this box. We withhold the advanced capabilities they would be willing to buy. And I just can't emphasize enough, buy.
So we're saying no to them purchasing billions of dollars worth of weaponry, but we're saying yes to just giving it to Ukraine.
And then to put insult to injury, then we lecture the Taiwanese, we're not so sure you're really committed to your own defense. Oh, you mean with the warmed over leftovers that you're giving us on a yard sale price now? I mean, come on.
That's wow. I would love for this to have come up to be a question in the press briefing. I don't think it ever will be, but I find that fascinating. And as a capitalist, infuriating as well. Steve Yates at Yates Comms, always a pleasure and always appreciate your perspective. Have a great week, my friend.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
You too. We're wrapping up this third hour, folks. I'm going to put this in your email prep because, yeah, I was reading this and I'm like, yes, and obviously you want to sell it. But what gets me is that it doesn't say it outright, but it intimates that we only would allow this much to be sold. And that mystifies me. Kane, we don't like making money? When did we not like making money? I would love to sell billions of dollars of weapons to Taiwan. Yes, please. We'll take that check. That's all right.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
You know, I asked my team, so I love Venn diagrams.
Oh, my God.
I really do. The three circles, you know, and then they overlap. And so Venn diagrams can help you sort through. I'm just kind of
how many times is she doing this?
And so I asked my team...
No, this is an old video. This is new video of her talking about Venn diagrams again.
Yeah.
I was just waiting for the, you know, I love being unburdened by what has been with my Venn diagram. Venn diagrams with Kamala Harris. Wow. Welcome back to the program. The make sure you sign up for Chapter and Verse over at Substack, because I'm going to have a couple of pieces that are going to be coming out. And then obviously you get your every day, you get your show prep in the mornings and that. But this headline too. So massive layoffs over at Anheuser-Busch. Have you seen this? People are losing their jobs. Anheuser-Busch wants to blame it on everybody but themselves. Now, Kane and I are from the Lou. We're from St. Louis. I lived three blocks away from the brewery. Actually, no, four blocks away from the brewery. And smelled the barley whenever they brew. Like warm summer evenings, you know, when you have a Cardinals game and you could hear the fireworks of home runs and you'd be, you know, sitting out on your deck, having a glass of wine or eating dinner, and you could smell the barley wafting through the air. That was before, by the way, all the crime started getting worse. But that's, you know, the brewery. I mean, I don't know anybody in St. Louis that doesn't know anybody that works at the brewery.
Right.
Or in some way with the brewery, whether it's distribution or a buyer or whatever. I mean, that is how big, you know, Anheuser-Busch is there in St. Louis. And so now to see, you know, that you have all these layoffs and everything else because of their own ridiculousness, because they decided to be stupid with their marketing. What gets me is I can't believe anybody didn't even see that. I don't want to relitigate the whole thing again, but how do you not know? Like, wow, that's probably not the best. That's probably bad. And all these people, I mean, hundreds of positions are being laid off. It's just sad. And they still have not, like, said, you know what? We totally blanked up. Man, that's part of the problem, too. All right, today in stupidity.
All right, it's our Vice President Kamala Harris delivering once again. She's a deliverer. She's a giver.
Venn diagram deliverer?
Yeah, listen to what she says here about democracy. It's cut 12 if you want to play that.
Yeah, that's fun.
Here, I'll just play it from here.
Good in terms of the nature of democracy is it's there are two sides to it in terms of the nature of it. There's a duality.
What?
On the one hand, when democracy is intact,
all right,
it is incredibly.
We've heard enough.
It's like hearing Greg Fokker pray at Meet the Parents. It's just like that, folks. That does it for us tonight. Make sure you sign up for Chapter and Verse, the newsletter. Find us at Facebook, YouTube. Back with you tomorrow.